This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we hear from Rolex returner Jordan Listet. Jordan is from Redmond in Washington State, but has recently been in training with Leslie Law in Ocala. Joe Whitehurst, the CEO, joins me now to talk about the 2015 USEA Hall of Fame inductees, which were announced just last week. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, we have a brand new year of inductees and both humans and horses again. So let's talk about the humans first, shall we?
Sure, yes. It's a bumper crop this time around, I can tell you. This eight is the most we've ever done, and it's eight this year.
Well, first of all, Becky Broussard, of course, is not surprising that she would be joining those very select few in the Hall of Fame, because she's contributed so much to the sport, hasn't she?
She has. Becky, I hope many people remember Becky. We lost her just a few short years ago. But Becky lived and breathed and just about did everything for the sport of eventing, and was very instrumental in developing the sport out there in Area 7. And she was just, whatever you asked of Becky, Becky delivered. She, and many times you didn't ask, have to ask. Becky was there before you needed it, and she just seemed to know intrinsically what the sport needed, what the association needed, whether it be time, her expertise, or whether we needed a check from time to time. Becky was always there.
Let's talk about her different contributions, Joe, because she did contribute in so many different ways, didn't she?
She did. Gosh, so many things. She started off doing the Heron Park horse trials out there in Kalispell in Montana, and she helped the team there put it on for many years. And then when they were it was getting to be a little difficult to see where that was going in the future, you know, if the park was going to be available for eventing, whether it suited. So she and her husband, Jerome, who has picked up where she left off as far as volunteering for the association, I have to just throw a big tribute to Jerome, because he stepped in. They were wanting to preserve the land out there, and they bought 600 acres, and it's preserved in perpetuity. And so Rebecca Farm was born. And that was because they did not know what the future at Heron Park was going to hold, and they wanted to be sure that the horse trials in that area was secure. So she did that. She owned horses for many of them, the local people, very loyal to her friends. Cindy Burge was like a daughter to her, and she became a great supporter of Cindy, buying her horses and helping Cindy's competitive career from a very young girl. She obviously was a big fan of Ralph Hills and supported his horses for a long time there. And, of course, then Karen and David O'Connor, Karen O'Connor, and then Philip Dutton. Obviously, David was a big friend of theirs, too. I think mostly because he'd retired, but who knows, if he hadn't retired from eventing, he might have been riding a Team Rebecca horse too. He's helping train them now. She also was a supporter of Amy Tryon and helped Amy, who was the ultimate kid that has this big dream but doesn't always have the financial backing to support the dream, and Becky made it happen for her. So Becky was just a wonderful, wonderful person. But on top of all that, when she was asked if she would serve on the Board of Governors of the USEA, she was like, my goodness, what can I do? How can I help? And then became one of the most valuable people to serve on the Board of Governors. They're all valuable, but for Becky, she just took it on and became the Vice President of Area Affairs. So she had 6 years on the board, and she did 6 years on the Endowment Trust. So Becky was like a member of the family, a member of the USEA family here in Leesburg, because she was always there and always had good advice and was always able to back it up with her hours of volunteer service.
And I know she will be remembered fondly, so that will be an emotional, whoever is inducting them. Nadine, can you give that away at this point?
Not everybody has got it sorted out. Just a couple have already sent me emails, but that isn't something we can release just yet.
All right. Okay, well, let's go next to Mrs. Jacqueline Mars, because, again, another woman who has contributed an enormous amount in so many different ways to the sport.
Where do you begin? Jackie's support of eventing goes back so many years. It's just amazing to think of a time when Jackie wasn't there. And she has been behind so many programs. I don't know how many remember that there used to be the M&M Mars Young Rider training sessions at the team at Gladstone for many years throughout, the late 80s and 90s. And that was Jackie. She had such a belief in building the pipeline for the next team riders. Such a philanthropic and generous lady. And when it came down to the young event horse and the future event horse programs, when we got, the young event horse program, I got that started back in 2004. And it was just how am I going to do this? We'll have a pilot program in Area 2, call a couple organizers, ask if they will put this on. And believe you me, the first thing that happened was, well, I need a committee. And Kira said, well, why not ask Nina Gardner and Jackie Mars? Jackie loves young horses. And Jackie's been on that committee since 2004. She has stepped off now because she feels she has a conflict, because so many of her young horses are coming through the program now. But my goodness, does she support the education of the officials? She supports the promotion of the programs, the Young Event Horse and the Future Event Horse programs. And she is, as a breeder herself, totally supportive of keep doing everything we can to help breeders promote their youngsters. It's just amazing how much Jackie has given to the sport that many people will never even know about, and yet she's there. But I think from having got to know her myself throughout these years with the Young Event Horse, she is, it's her knowledge. She has an amazing depth of knowledge about horses and about the sport, and tapping it for the USEA to be able to tap into that knowledge is—that's worth a gold mine. She's a gold mine for us, just because of her knowledge and how much she is willing to share that with anybody who takes a moment to ask her. Great, great lady.
And of course, owned horses for David and Karen and for Anna Sue Burnett. And now, of course, it's Lauren Kiefer, who really brings on the young horses that are owned by Mrs. Mars. So, a marvellous continuum there of horses coming into the sport, a very steady stream of them. So a name will be carried for a long time to come, I think, in the sport. And when we think of that, Joe, we have to remember Richard and Vita Thompson, who similarly shaped eventing in this country through their ownership and generosity and devotion to the sport.
Dick and Vita Thompson, icons in the sport. Obviously they were the driving force behind Radnor, and Dick was there in all weathers, doing whatever it took. As Kira Stewart said about him, that if there's a job to be done or a little crisis at an event where you need something done quickly, you know, mud moved or whatever, Dick was your person. That he found a way to get all these things done. And, of course, Dick served on the Board of Governors some years ago. And he and Vita, true supporters, and obviously great friends with Jackie Mars. How lucky were we to have Dick and Vita Thompson and Jackie Mars owning horses in the, you know, 80s and 90s for our riders. Jim Wofford had that lovely horse, Castle Wellen, and Dick asked Vita if she'd like to, you know, help him, and so she actually bought Castle Wellen, and they've started an amazing owner-rider partnership, and having Karen O'Connor, or Karen Lendy as she was at the time, she was obviously one of Jimmy's students, and was the choice for Karen to take over the rides after Jimmy retired after 84. But Dick and Vita became like parents, and I think Karen's parents would be the first to say they were willing to share Karen with Dick and Vita. They really became a one big family, and just amazing support for the sport.
And another person who the sport owes a debt of gratitude to is Miss Margaret Lindsay Warden, who you'll be inducting too. Tell us about her, for those who are not familiar with her background, which was extensive in the sport, wasn't it?
It was, in all equestrian sports, to be honest. Miss Margaret Lindsay Warden, she actually, Middle Tennessee Pony Club, as it is now, she saw an event take place back in the early 50s, around 52 or something, and said, oh, we can do that. And so she put on that first ever horse trials in the United States. And she got Jack Burton to write the rule book, and he volunteered and got everything set up, designing the course. Colonel Paul Wymert, who is another great icon in the sport over the years, he actually rode in it too. I have a photograph of Colonel Paul jumping a big stone wall there, and obviously one of General Burton doing it too. But she touched so many parts of equestrianism in the United States. But that first event back then in 1953. Was just the start of it all, and it was her vision and her hard work and her dedication to do great things for eventing in this country that led to what we have today. So we have a great debt of gratitude to owe to Margaret Lindsay Warden, of course, who is no longer with us, but what a great lady she was.
And what a wonderful legacy. Now let's turn to Mike Huber. He was one of the youngest riders ever to be named onto the US team. He, of course, made his mark at the 1978 World Championships, and he's the one current rider, still active in the sport, particularly as a coach, who is being inducted.
Yeah, Mike Huber, what a guy. Yeah, he actually was president of USCA, youngest president we'd ever had, and he was asked if he would step in, because, you know, it's a tough job. There's a lot of volunteer hours, a lot of extra time given late at night. You know, they're asked to work on committees, they're asked to chair meetings, and of course all of the preparation for those things mostly takes place after their day's work. So where they find the time, I don't know. But Mike, at a very young age, when he was still actively competing on the team representing the United States, gave up pretty much all his spare time to become president of the USC. At the time, it was the USCTA. And Mike is one of the reasons we're living here in Leesburg. He was president during that whole transition from the Hamilton, Massachusetts facility when we were in Hamilton at the mansion there on South, I've forgotten the name of the street now. But anyway, we were in Hamilton, then we were in Topsfield in a temporary state, and then they moved us down here to Leesburg. And Mike was head of the group that put all that together and helped drive that whole thing, and stood on the back lot here before, while it was still all grassy treed area, and we've got pictures of him there with his foot on the spade as we broke the ground for the USEA headquarters that we have here today. So I don't know how much he sacrificed to be the president and to serve on the committees and do what he did. I just know that we're eternally grateful to him, because he took us through a really tough time of transition, and he never gives up. I mean, the committees that he sat on all his life, and I think, you know, I'm sure that that had something to do with, you know, being around Neil Ayer, Jack LaGoff, just being raised to give back. Mike has given back so much to the sport, and he's still doing it. He still rides himself, although not internationally, but he still rides, still coaches, still runs his business, has developed a beautiful facility, and probably one of the most successful eventing facilities there are. And he sits on, I don't know how many committees that he sits on for the USEA and the USEF. Just a tower of strength. And Mike, we love you. Thank you.
Well, let's move on to the horses, Joe, because we have three that are being inducted this year. Let's begin with Gina Miles' partner, McKinley.
Oh, the big gentle giant, huh? He's a wonderful horse. It's funny, just when I was reflecting on how he came to this country, when Tom Schultz and his wife Laura, they'd gone to look for a horse in Ireland. They were horse shopping, and first thing they went to was they saw the young event horse competition that was going on. I think it was at Punchestown, and they just saw this big chestnut horse jump two fences and gallop through the finish, and he was enough that was enough for Tom to really take note. But he didn't want to buy the first horse he saw in Ireland. He thought there were others to look at, and certainly but he just said, you know, put it on the list to come back and see. And so they toured around and drove all over Ireland looking at horses and said, let's go back and look at that big liver chestnut. And he bought him. And McKinley was 17.3, a little bit big for the average event horse. That's an awful big horse. But my goodness, I guess his heart was as big as he was. I mean, he's all heart, wasn't he? And just tried his heart out for Gina. And, you know, she was just starting running her business out of Tom and Maura's farm there. And the two of them basically, I would say, grew up together, because Gina was, was already married. They're international careers grew together, and it's one of those partnerships made in heaven that Gina found her horse and the horse found Gina, and thanks to Tom and Laura, and McKinley went to the great heights of the sport and brought home a silver medal from Hong Kong in 2008. Just a great partnership. So McKinley deserves his place in the role of honor.
Absolutely, and obviously a partnership there that really made it for Gina as well. I'm sure she would join us in thanking him for what he did for her career as well. And another one that equally has made a huge impact in her career was the partnership of Dorothy Trapp Kroll with Molokai, because he really launched her career, didn't he?
Oh, my goodness, he did. I mean, you often wonder how these marriages come together, you know, your right place at the right time. And I was reading a little bit. Joni Morris had done a bio on him with Dorothy. And, you know, she was saying that she sat on him and didn't want to get off that first time she tried him, and couldn't come up with the money, so had to buy him on a payment plan, because she was so convinced that this was the horse. It's funny, I remember when we used to do special permissions for horses, because to move up the levels back in the early 90s, you had to be graded. You know, if you wanted to go up to advanced, you had to be a grade 3 horse to go advanced. And poor Molokai never quite, you only got points if you were like in the top 5. At any event, and if there were less than 10 starters, you got half points. So Molokai would have this record of moving up the most places after dressage, because he was a cross-country machine and a jumping machine, absolutely no doubt about it. That's what he loved to do, and he existed just to get through dressage. It was something beneath him, I think. So he never quite got the points to move up. So you had to apply for special permissions. Actually, you had to be grade 2 to go advanced. Had to be grade 3 to go intermediate. And so we were always doing special permissions for Molokai, just because he was always just out of the points based on his dressage. So he finally got there. And once he did, he never looked back. I mean, once he could show everybody what he could do on that cross-country course, there was nobody like Molokai. And I think at 94, at the World Equestrian Games, I remember we've got a photograph of Dorothy coming out of the dressage arena and watching the scores go up, and you cannot believe her face, because those scores were the best he'd ever got. He was just phenomenal. And then, of course, cross country was like a piece of cake to him. There are not many like Molokai.
And of course, they were rewarded with the individual silver medal, weren't they, in The Hague?
They certainly were. And he almost made it to Atlanta in 96. But I think for Dorothy, again, in the article that Joni Morris wrote, you know, put shivers down my back, because she was saying in there that Dorothy just remembers riding at the first 4-star at Rolex, when it was the first running of that pinnacle trophy for the highest placed American at the Rolex Kentucky 4-star. Every fence he jumped, it wasn't just, you know, yay, yay, clap, clap. She said it was a roar. Every fence they jumped, and it was just lifted Molokai and her. And then, of course, in the show jumping, when he came so close to winning it and just rubbed one rail, the crowd went absolutely wild, and the chanting for Molokai. I mean, she said it was just something that you only really experience once. And Molokai gave Dorothy that.
Well, being the hometown girl as well, she always had a tremendous cheering party at Rolex too, didn't she? And that's where they were retired, weren't they, when he was finally hanging up his shoes. That's where they did it, and hanging up his saddle, I should say. That's when he did it and retired to the bluegrass pastures there, where he lived to the age of 30, so a wonderful innings.
Well, yeah, can you imagine, you know, racehorse, came off the track and then was given a career like that. You know, the way we look after these event horses, I want to be an event horse when I come back. Can you imagine how pampered they are? You know, we ask a lot of them. We give them a second career, but my goodness, Dorothy worshipped that horse, and I think she probably still worships his memory too. But the care and love that these horses get, and I think Molokai probably thought he was in heaven, and he was, really, wasn't he?
He was. Well, another horse that really has left his footprints, hoof prints, all over the Kentucky Horse Park with all those wins at Rolex was Winsome Adante, or Dan as we know him, owned by Ms. Linda Wachmeister, who has done so much again for the sport. And to that combination, obviously what Kim Severson achieved with him was just stunning, and you would not be surprised that he would be inducted this year at all, because, you know, his time had to come, didn't it? They together made such a contribution to the sport.
Oh, my goodness. Again, marriage made in heaven. I mean, Kim is such a talented rider that she gets the very best out of any horse she sits on. She's one of the best riders we've had in this country and still have, thank the Lord. But to put her and Winston Dante together with Linda's total support, gosh, that was a dream. I think the one thing that Kim has said about him was his consistency. She knew every time she went out that she was what she was going to get from him. And obviously, you know, on the odd occasion, mistakes happen as they happen to all of us. But for the most part, with those two, it was like you knew that he was going to give his best and Kim was going to do her best, and the result was going to be fabulous. And that's what I think we all remember about Winsome Adante winning Rolex three times. Just been so consistent in his performance. And a lot of it goes into the training, because Kim, you know, we spent hours training him, and it showed. The work that those two did together was, I think, unsurpassed. They're just brilliant.
Yes, he really made his mark, as I said, on the Rolex event and being a team member for so long. Wonderful contribution by Kim and Winsome Adante. So I think a few tears in that hall this December when you induct these inductees, Joe.
I think so, because just the appreciation. This is the only way that we can show them how much we appreciate every single person and every single horse and the owners of those horses. Just let them know how much we appreciate what they've done, and that their names will go down in the history books forever. And yes, it is very emotional. There's no doubt about it. But we can make grown men cry in those things, and we do. and it's heartwarming, because I think just how much these people feel for these horses, and how much we feel for the people that have done so much to put the sport where it is today. We can't thank them enough, and hopefully this in some way will let them know how much we want to honor them for what they've done.
And we should mention that, of course, there are so many that you would have wanted to induct, but you're limited to the number that you can, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there is a cost to this. It's not cheap, but it's just a time factor too. I think Jim Wofford has been our master of ceremonies since the very first one that we did in December 1999, when we first launched this program. And Jim's been the master of ceremonies for us ever since. And he does the awards for us too, and he knows that it's like the Oscars, that they can take a long time, and if we did any more, we'd probably have to do it in two nights. I think that would not be good. But it's a wonderful gala celebration of the lives of these people and the wonderful contributions they've made, and also those of the horses that, let's face it, without those horses, we wouldn't any of us be doing what we're doing today.
How true. Well, that all happens, of course, as part of the annual meeting, which this year takes place in Washington, D.C. in early December, doesn't it, Joe?
It does. It will be at the Omnishorum, which is in Washington, D.C. itself. It's near the Adams-Morgan area, and I think, you know, all the museums, maybe not quite so much in walking distance, but maybe a $5 taxi ride to the National Art Gallery and the Smithsonian Museums, and just so much in Washington to see and do, and of course the restaurants, and just the memorial, you know, the Washington Memorial, and so many Lincoln and Jefferson, and I think it's going to be a real weekend. So I hope people will have an extra couple of days so that they can go tour Washington. It's a really great place to be.
And we will, of course, remind everybody of the program as we get closer to the time there in the fall of what's taking place this year at convention. So lots of opportunities to get you back on the show, Joe, and talk about what we can expect at this year's event.
Yeah, we're building a very, very strong program right now and working with Area 2 to do that, because Area 2 is the home area for the annual meeting this year. So, yeah, lots to look forward to, Chris.
And you can find more information about the inductees and photographs on the website at useventing.com. And remember to check back often, as information regarding this year's annual convention is added to the website. And just a note that you may have to adjust your volume for the interview that's coming up. We did have gremlins here in the studio this week. I'm with Jordan Lindstedt, who is preparing for Rolex. This will be her second trip to Rolex. You're down here in Ocala training with Leslie Law. How long have you been here?
I left Washington on the 12th of March, and I went directly to Poplar Place where I competed and then traveled down here. So I think I've been here now like 4.5 to 5 weeks.
And what have you been doing since you've been down here?
I first came down, the first week I spent a lot on the flat. Leslie helped my horse that I competed at Rolex in 2012 tremendously on the flat. So we kind of focused there with Capato mostly. And then I think I was only there about a week, and then we headed up to the Fork. And so Capato ran the CIC 3-star there. And then I came back, and we went back to the flat, and he's done a couple gallops. And I went over to the Ocala horse properties and did the combined test there.
So how is his preparation going so far? Are you happy with it at this point, with just a week to go before you leave?
Yeah, actually, I'm thrilled. The last 2 days especially, I have had, I think, the best rides on him I've ever had. So for the two of us to kind of figure it out, it's perfect timing, just as I'm going to leave here on Sunday.
Well, let's talk a little bit about him. Your co-owner with this horse, how did you come about the ride?
Well, so my mom and I actually own the horse, and the horse was originally imported as a 3.5-year-old, and it was an ironic situation. A lady came to rent a rental property that my mom had and had purchased part of Capato and kind of was looking to purchase the other half and bring him over to the States. And my mom decided to be a partner with that lady. And soon, once he got here to the States, she bought out the other lady's half. So my mom's owned him solely. He was supposed to be for my sister originally, but he was a little bit too much horse. Real gangly and goofy, spooky, really tough, just in general to ride. So he kind of got passed around a little bit between different trainers that we had in the area, and was going to be sold as a dressage horse because nobody thought he would make a, event horse with how spooky he was. So I was down with Tammy Smith at the time working for her as an assistant, and he got sent to me to be sold. And Tammy and I liked him so much. He'd matured, grown up a little bit. I think he was about 7 then. And so I took the ride on him at that point.
All right. So how long is it now that you've been competing with him?
I think this is our 6th year. So, he started out the first year. I think he ran one novice, moved up to training. And then that year is when, as far as a co-owner, Tom Newman of Revitavet owns 10% of him. So he bought basically the name and has helped with a lot of the expenses through the years competing. So he, my mom, and I are now currently the owners.
Well, last year you had some top place finishes with him. Was that going according to plan then? Because this obviously was the big prize you were after.
Yeah, last year I think every competition he went to, he finished, through Galway in like the top 6. So it was a great year. The first year I moved him up to advanced was in 2013. And he could have run the CCI at Galway that year, but I just didn't feel like he was quite ready. Not as schooled on the flat. The changes weren't really there. So I held back, and I didn't think he needed to run another 2-star. So I just didn't compete. And then last year I had the full year at the advanced level, and I think everything went, exactly to my plan as how I wanted it to go. Each event, the coolest thing with him has been that he really wasn't much of a cross-country horse. It was what everybody thought was going to hold him back, and I think that's his strongest phase now. So he just eats up the ground and really changed the way that he gallops and jumps just through training. So he feels really good.
So what has Leslie been working on with you mainly?
The connection. So he's real upright through the shoulder, but in the ring, he kind of comes up against my hand a little bit from the spook. You know, he still looks at the flower boxes and the judges and all of that. So when he comes up, he gets a little bit disconnected and too high in the neck and kind of can get a bit behind the vertical. So been working mainly on getting him to really take the connection, really move out and forward. And, you know, I think just minor changes, but through my seat, the way that I'm moving with him has really improved the last few weeks.
And the fitness is just where you want it, I hope, now?
Yeah, the fitness is great. I've done several gallops since I've been down here each week, and I've gone over to John Holling's place. He has a great, great field to gallop in. He has one more to do on Sunday, which will be our last one, and then, you know, he'll probably kind of breeze a little bit or canter a bit once I get up to Kentucky. But yeah, one more full big gallop on Saturday.
Well, this is your second trip to the Kentucky Horse Park. You know your way around it a little bit. That's got to help, even though it's a different horse. Psychologically, it must help.
Yeah, I think it'll help. The first year, it was the horse that I had that year, too. Was a horse that everybody thought kind of each level he moved up would be the last level that he'd get to. And he kind of, against all odds, made it all the way to Kentucky, which was just extraordinary as far as vets and trainers all felt and myself. So that weekend was very surreal. You know, I didn't take it in as much as I hoped to take it in this time. It kind of was a blur because it all went so fast and I was there at Rolex and couldn't believe it. So I hope to enjoy it a little bit more this time. You know, I think I'll still have the same nerve because you're there at Kentucky. But yeah, I'm excited. So,
well, this is the big one, the Four Star. Obviously, every rider dreams of. What would be your expectations for the competition, realistically, Jordan?
Realistically, you know, I don't know how competitive he'll be. I think we can put in a good test on the flat if he doesn't come up and get spooky. You know, so I'm hoping for low 50s, maybe high 40s. And cross country, you know, I'm probably not going to go out of the box and really be thinking I'm going to make the time. I just want to have a good, clear go. He's not green to the level, but he's only had the 1 year advanced. He's green to the 4-star level, you know. So I just hope to keep him healthy and happy and sound and get through the weekend with a, you know, finishing score. And then hopefully in the years to come, he'll be more competitive.
And if he had a say in this, which phase would he prefer?
I think he prefers the cross country now. I would not have thought that, you know, a couple years ago, but he gets amped up and excited just like any, you know, thoroughbred that I've ridden. He's a Hanoverian and typically, you know, didn't get as jazzed up as he does now. So I think he really enjoys the cross country.
And this figures where in the big scheme of things, Jordan, you know, going forward after Rolex, what would the big picture look like?
The big picture, you know, I would love to grant to be able to go to Europe and compete somewhere. Haven't really thought too far ahead as this has been the main focus now the last couple of years. He is, you know, on the list for the Pan Ams. I think that's a bit of a long shot too for him this year, but, you know, we'll kind of see, I guess, how he finishes up there and then finance-wise and grant-wise, if there's something in the fall that he could go do overseas, and then definitely Kentucky again next spring.
And then presumably back home after Rolex to Washington State?
Yes, yeah, it'll be nice to not live in my horse trailer anymore. I'll head back on Monday probably. I have a couple friends that are going to drive back with me, so the two horses and I will finally get back home.
All right, terrific. Well, the very best of luck next week at Rolex.
Thank you.
Coming up on the show next week, we're going to be discussing the advancements in safety, when among us will be Carol Kozlowski, Sarah Broussard, and John Holling. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to various podcast apps, including Podbean and Stitcher, and the transcription is also available on the website at useventing.com. Until next time, thanks for listening and enjoy your eventing.